thinking in terms of pennies. We learned that if we took care of the pennies, the dollars would take care of themselves. We were told that a penny saved is a penny earned. So our early parameters were very small, and subconsciously we never lost them. Our thinking created a paradigm that became a prison. But a penny saved is still just a penny. So we might want to release that old thinking. A dollar earned is a dollar earned, and a penny saved is a penny saved. Which would you rather have in your bank account, the dollar earned or the penny saved? And $100 or $1,000 earned is a lot more than those pennies would grow to be, but we pretend not to see that. We become shy and retiring about money. People mention a large amount, and we blush and bat our eyes as our hearts go racing. Some theorize that we may have been emotionally sabotaged by the scarcity mindset of the Great Depression. A lot of our money proverbs and sayings come from that era of financial fear and terror. They were well-meant survival-based sayings, but damaging to the psychological relaxation necessary for the creation of wealth. Sayings such as, waste not, want not, or money doesn't grow on trees, and we have to be tight and frugal. Those are all good sayings as far as they go. They put the brakes on mental recklessness, but they also put the brakes on creativity. Because for true wealth creation to occur, you want to allow the state of mind that can expand. You want to be open enough to look for ever larger amounts and develop a mindset that can easily move a decimal point. You want to expect the bigger amounts so that you'll become more comfortable with the bigger amounts of money than the smaller amounts. Sam remembers when the most money he ever made in one day was $800, a big commission day. Sam says, and I thought that was the most money in the world, and I remember how I felt, how I jumped up and down, and it was terrific, $800. And now I'll have days with $8,000, $80,000, $100,000 in one day. If you told that to me 10 years ago, that I could actually make $80,000 in one day, I would have said, I don't think I could handle that. But now, it's a very non-emotional thing. It's like, well, it's just a decimal point anyway. It's really important to grasp the effect on each and every one of us that the Depression had. Even for today's great-grandchildren of those who lived through the Depression, it still applies. That mood of real fear is still there, that wealth could go away. Watch out, you could lose everything. People actually think that the pursuit of wealth itself is somehow going to cause poverty. They think, if I try to make some money, I'm going to lose it all. Look at our neighbors. They tried and they lost their shirt. We actually had one of our coaching clients say that. He said, I'd like to be like you and start a business, but I just don't have a business head. I'd lose my shirt the first day. And what Sam said to him was, why not just buy a lot of shirts? Sam has shared in our earlier book, 9 Lies That Are Holding Your Business Back, that he failed 5 times in small businesses before he learned to think differently. He was always thinking small in those days. Sam says, I used to look at businesses and think if you can just make a couple of cents off each thing, then it'll really start adding up. But it turns out that it took too long to add up. As we consult with our small business clients, we want them to realize that it takes just as long to sell a customer a $30 item as it does to sell a customer a $300 item or a $3,000 item or a $30,000 item. The way to cure the irrational fear of thinking big is to just keep moving your internal decimal point. The minute you find yourself at one number, just think, what if I thought a little bigger than that? Never be satisfied with the penny-level thinking. Realize that because of the negative money psychology put into our heads by the Depression, our unconscious tendency will always be to go small, to contract and shrink down, Emotionally, it feels safer and easier. But creating wealth is about replacing the emotional with the logical. So it takes a little push to keep expanding your concept of what your value really is. Number 87. Ask above your fear. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, quote, "Fear always springs from ignorance," end quote. What holds a lot of people back from money is just the fear of asking for it. This happens on many levels. There's a fear that if you have a business or offer a service and you raise your prices, and we encounter this constantly with business owners we coach, people will not want to do business with you because you're more expensive now. The assumption is that the only thing that customers want is low price. It's an erroneous belief. So people for years and years have kept their fees way too low. They're not able to serve themselves well or serve their customers well because they're just afraid of what'll happen. You face two worlds. There's what you think is going to happen, and there's what actually happens. And what happens in the mind is always worse than what happens out in real life. Our experience with ourselves and our clients is that raising fees helps the business despite the few defectors that were not your ideal customers anyway. We had a client named Drake do this recently. Drake raised his prices, and out of more than 300 regular customers, there were only 3 who left him. And if we'd asked him before how many he thought would bail over the new fee, he would have said 50 to 100. The key is to just condition yourself to have your fee reflect your ever-increasing value to people. Take a deep breath and ask for something above and beyond what your fear tells you not to ask for. And keep doing it, because now you've created a new game and a new level for yourself. Like Ralph Waldo Emerson said, quote, "The greater part of courage is having done it before," end quote. Every day, you're delivering something better than you did yesterday. You are better today than you were yesterday. If you're not, you shouldn't be in the line you're in. And if you're better every day, then why isn't your fee rising accordingly? When a company gets better, the stock price keeps going up, so your own prices need to go up too, and if they're not, you have a great opportunity to increase your wealth. Number 88. Don't look in the obvious place. Earl Nightingale said, quote, "Just one great idea can completely revolutionize your life," end quote. You might want to look for something that doesn't look like an opportunity. That would be your real opportunity because you're the only one looking there. You'll remember in the early 80s when VCRs came out and we started renting movies. Soon the market was overserviced by a factor of 10. There were 10 times as many video stores as there had to be for the actual market out there, because everyone was jumping into this hot new opportunity. The same thing happened in the mid-90s, when every single person was starting up a coffee shop because cappuccino was the hot new craze. Anytime we've seen something that's supposed to be the next great thing and jumped on the bandwagon, we've paid a price. Because that hot thing is so obvious, and everyone's talking about it, we joined an overcrowded field, a day late and a dollar short. Look at real estate. Not long ago, we had people look at us with a twinkle in their eye and say, "Don't tell anybody, I'm getting into real estate, the housing market, it's huge." And we said, "Okay, we won't tell anybody." The real road to wealth stretches inside you, from your mind to your heart. It's internal. What can you be passionate about? It's not something external that everyone else is greedily jumping on. Number 89. Don't discuss your plan. Shakespeare said, quote, "Action is eloquence," end quote. Put your creative energy into the work itself instead of talking about the work. Talking takes a lot of energy. Boasting takes even more. That energy is precious. If you're telling everybody what you're going to do, then you're not listening to them, and opportunities for improved success reveal themselves not when you're talking, but when you're listening. No one ever talked themselves up to a new level of consciousness. Opportunities reveal themselves when other people are being vulnerable and talking and telling you what they're looking for, what they're hoping to achieve, and what they're involved in, because, all of a sudden, you'll hear something in their words that is in alignment with what you're doing, and you will make a connection with that person that leads to something very good for your business. This can't happen when you're talking. It has to happen when you're open, listening, and welcoming. Sam gets real curious about people and asks them about their lives and learns a lot from them. And they feel impressed by him and close to him. And a lot of people even ask him after the conversation, "Will you coach me? Will you help me?" And that's not because he said, "I'm a big successful business coach." It's because he asked questions. Boasting about your own plans puts pressure on you and the plans. It shuts down your ability to listen and keep the plan flexible. The other downside about broadcasting your future to others is that naysayers will feel threatened by the fact that you have a plan and they don't, so they'll shoot it down, warn you off, caution you in the name of love. Keep your biggest ambitions secret and exciting. Let people watch them evolve. Stay in action. 1 minute moving your plan forward is worth 1,000 minutes of talk. Number 90. Ignore the experts. John F. Kennedy said, quote, "Let us resolve to be masters, not the victims, of our history, controlling our own destiny without giving way to blind suspicions and emotions." End quote. Sam remembers being frightened by the experts. They were saying that Generation X would be the first generation not to do as well as their parents financially. Sam panicked. Prior to Sam's generation, every generation had done better than their parents financially. They've been able to ride the elevator up. The economy was always expanding, and the country was doing well, and new products and markets and services were being developed, and people were succeeding all through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But once we hit the 90s, the experts said, "It's done. You kids are now on the downward spiral. We've pretty much peaked." Sam remembers thinking, "Wow, that's not good. Too bad I was born too late. If only I'd been born a bit earlier, I could have had it as good as my parents had it, but the experts say there's no hope because this generation just won't do as well as their parents." But it hasn't turned out that way. Sam's done much better, not only than most people's parents have done, but sooner than their parents had done it. What has taken a lot of people to the age of 50 or 60 to accomplish, Sam did by the time he hit 30. Now Sam teaches others. Ever since I met Sam, my own business has taken off. His enthusiasm for these ways to create wealth was absolutely contagious, and I started applying them left and right. I don't regret not doing it earlier. I'm just grateful for everything now. So what about the other experts? Why do we ever listen to them? Anytime the real estate market or the stock market gets a little bit hot, the experts say, it can't last, there's going to be a correction, it's a bubble. There are experts always predicting the next Great Depression right around the corner. The end times are always near. People have been predicting doom since the beginning of time. More than 2,000 years ago, the prophets were warning that the world would end in their own literal calendar lifetimes. Oops, didn't happen. Where's the apocalypse we were longing for? Remember that the experts who are paid the most attention to are the ones who've got the most negative predictions, because The media will not get ratings from the headline that says, "Things are as great as usual." But if somebody says, "Watch out, within a year all the banks are going to be closed," that paper will sell out. That show will top the charts. The whole concept of selling news is centered on dire warnings and shocking scare tactics. Ratings come when viewers are upset or frightened. That's what gets people to watch. People use the media as a kind of warning system, just for a thrill. Therefore, the media seeks experts who come with dire predictions. That's who they seek out. And they give us a false impression that these are all the real experts. These experts are saying that this prosperity can't last, and our dependence on this resource is going to cripple us as a nation, and things don't look good, the planet is in trouble. But we don't understand what the media is really selling here. They're selling fear. We think they're selling reality. Katie Couric is in the same business that Freddy Krueger is. And if we don't really understand that and grasp it, we're going to have a hard time creating wealth because we're going to be scared all the time because we're believing the experts. People think everything is limited and there's so many constraints that they better be careful. Experts in the media tell them all about limitation all day. Soon they're trapped in the finite fallacy. Don't let this happen to you. Tune into the infinite. Realize that the universe is evolving in ever-increasing abundance. That is its nature. Listen to your inner wisdom. That's the only expert you'll ever need. Number 91. Turn on the speed. Jim Rohn said, quote, "Time has more value than money. You can get more money, but you can't get more time." End quote. Whatever you've got going on, continue to speed it up. Many fundraising organizations that we have coached, for example, improve their fundraising results by speeding up the thank you and receipt process. A simple, small thing, but donors feel so much more appreciated when they get their acknowledgments immediately instead of days or even weeks later. Many people get busy during the day and actually work against wealth by trying to figure out how long they can get away without responding to a communication. What can we get away with? What does the customer expect? And how long can we actually wait before we get something back to them? And they try to stretch it out as long as possible, not realizing that any time you can do something faster, the customer benefits and starts recommending you to others. So, when you get really good at responding quickly and take the position that says, "We're not the cheapest, but we're the fastest," you can keep your service at high alert and charge people more because people love speed. Time is the new money for so many people. People can send letters by regular mail, but often choose to send things by FedEx because speed has such a value these days. If you are going to get into certain types of business, you would always have the advantage if you could be the guaranteed speed leader. Think of the frustration attached to something that is slow or takes forever. What would people be willing to spend for a guaranteed speedy completion? FedEx itself created its wealth by asking this very question. How can you be faster at what you do and make a game of it? Don't make it a burden, but have fun with it, because it can astonish people and bring wealth your way. Number 92. Specialize in specialization. Jerry Garcia said, quote, "You do not merely want to be considered the best of the best. You want to be considered the only ones that do what you do." End quote. When you specialize in something, you'll speed up your road to success. A lot of people are coaches today. And recently, we went to a website of someone who is a retirement coach, who specializes in coaching retirees on how they can have a wonderful life after work. We just thought, how brilliant is that? Because retirees do have money for life coaching, and they certainly have the time, and people who are defined by their roles as professionals or parents can lose all identity in retirement. They don't know who or how to be. Perfect opening for a specialized coach. Teaching people how to have an enjoyable retirement is a terrific specialization. If someone has just been a life coach going into a retirement community saying, "I am a life coach," they would probably say, "Why do we need a life coach? Our lives are almost over. And what is a life coach anyway?" Anytime you specialize, it draws people to you. People are willing to pay a higher amount of money for specialization. Don't limit your income by trying to be all things to all people. Don't come from the need-based mentality that tells you you can't afford to pass up anything. Don't have your business card read, "I'll just do anything for anybody." We coach people starting a business who are focused on that needy part of the worried mind that prompts them to put up a sign that says, "No job too small." Knock that off. When surgeons specialize, the price goes up. A visit with a medical specialist will cost a lot more than a general practitioner. A brain surgeon gets paid more than a GP. So, the more specialized you are, the higher the value of your time and your service. Can I be the only person in this industry that does something? We know a lawyer who specializes in elderly people who are going through Alzheimer's issues. You can get lawyers anywhere, but how many lawyers specialize in people going through Alzheimer's? And if this guy costs more than a regular lawyer, you feel he's worth it. When Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead said, "Be the only ones who do what you do," he knew what he was talking about. If you have a Porsche and need to get your Porsche repaired, and you're driving along and you see Porsche repair, and on the next block you see car repair, you'll pull into Porsche repair, because you feel those people are really going to know your car. They do Porsches all day, and they may cost a little extra money, but they're not going to make the mistakes that the other people make because they don't know your car. So in the long run, it will cost you less money. Contrast that with the sign that says, and we've seen them, quote, "Car repair, specializing in foreign, domestic, and other cars," end quote. That's not specialization at all. So don't be afraid to have a specialty. It's also a wonderful way to focus on what you love to do. Become a specialist in it. Number 93. Give yourself a year. William Arthur Ward said, quote, "People never plan to be failures. They simply fail to plan to be successful," end quote. If you're in debt or have a severe lack of money, and we've both been in that situation, to think that you're going to solve all your problems in a month is unreasonable. That thinking will ultimately backfire. Instead, learn to think in terms of a year, not overnight success, but a very good year. Allow yourself a full year to make substantial progress, and if you're in debt, just the simple act of writing down all the things you owe at the beginning of the year, as small and minute as they are, will help you get started. Because as the year starts, you'll be going down that list and crossing things off as you take care of them. That's the excitement of doing that kicks in right away. We both have lists of goals going back many years, with the yearly goals now being more than 10 times what they once were. It's amazing the change that will happen from 1 year to the next if you're focused on allowing your one good year to happen. When you're looking towards a one good year wealth creation, be open to the question, what can I do to create it? And this one-year miracle can be performed in jobs, too. You don't have to be an entrepreneur. Many of our coaching clients have day jobs, and they create one-year money miracles there, too. Our friend Stephanie recently was working for a framing company that had a certain amount of standard pay for the position she was in, but she kept increasing her skills and the amount of value she was providing to the owner with her work, even though there was no real reward in sight. And when one day her immediate supervisor left the company, they immediately put Stephanie in that position. So now she's doing both jobs, the job she used to do and the management of the department. She already proved to them that she could do it. And as Napoleon Hill said frequently, quote, "The man who does more than he is paid for will soon be paid for more than he does," end quote. Keep increasing your value to whomever you work for. You don't have to know exactly where your future wealth is going to come from. You can have a job with a large company and create wealth for yourself. Yet, some people say, "But you don't understand. I'm in a business or company where my boss just doesn't appreciate me and he's a big idiot." Even so, if you create more value that you deliver to your company, even if it's not appreciated at the company you're in, it will always pay off. If your attitude is one of continuous value creator, you will always get offers from people who notice that, and your skills will build exponentially. We recently went into Office Depot and saw a happy, energetic lady working there, and we thought, wow, this person is doing something that they might think is mundane, but her attitude and the get-it-done happy energy is amazing. This is the kind of person we want. She joined our team a few months later. Our former client and friend Carl was a service tech at a copier company who set out to become a salesperson within a year and make nice commissions. He did exactly that. He was patient enough to have it occur over a year's time of work and study and contribution. 2 years after that, he was a sales manager. Give yourself a one-year money miracle project and patiently execute it. Number 94. Just take the next one. Helen Keller said, quote, "When one door of happiness closes, another opens. But often, we look so long at the closed door that we do not see the one that is opened for us." End quote. Don't worry about lost opportunities. They don't mean a thing. People give them way too much meaning and drama, and it brings them down and renders their thinking impotent. We were driving in a lovely part of town with our depressed friend Gregory, who said, "Wow, if I would have bought 3 houses in this area 20 years ago, then I would have been rich. I guess I missed the boat." Gregory didn't realize that there are lots of boats waiting every day. If you miss one, you can take another. You don't have to take all the boats. Just one will get you where you want to go. Boats are opportunities, and they are always appearing to the person who is ready to sail. But people like Gregory would rather talk about the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. They don't realize that there is no such thing. If you miss your own once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, celebrate. The next one is going to be even better. Bing Crosby had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have a huge hit record when someone played him a demo recording of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Bing thought the song was childish and would never sell. He rejected it. Later, it was recorded by Gene Autry, and the rest is history. But Bing Crosby only laughed about it later. There were other opportunities always waiting. In fact, in the right frame of mind, anything at all can be an opportunity. In this frame of mind, you'll never worry about lost opportunities because you'll start to realize that opportunity can never be lost. Why? It's a creation. It's not an external event. For example, Fred DeLuca was a teenager who borrowed $1,000 to start a sandwich shop with his friend Peter Buck in Bridgeport, Connecticut. They called their little shop Pete's Super Submarines. Prior to opening the sandwich shop, Fred DeLuca had never even made a submarine sandwich for himself or anyone else. Fortunately for him, Fred did not fall victim to the myth that says it takes money to make money. This myth is actually one of the 9 business lies we write about in 9 Lies That Are Holding Your Business Back and The Small Business Millionaire. Nor did he worry about being too young or too old or anything else. He wanted to make money to help himself go to college, and so there wasn't a lot of room in his head for worry. Although Fred DeLuca started very small, his sandwich chain is now all over the world, described by some as the most successful franchise business of all time. Is there anyone who has not enjoyed a delicious Subway sandwich made to order? Subway uses the advertising slogan, "Eat Fresh," to explain how every sandwich is made on freshly baked bread using fresh ingredients in front of the customer to their exact specification by employees who Subway terms sandwich artists. Notice that Fred DeLuca did not have to catch a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to succeed. In his own words, anyone can, quote, "start small and finish big," end quote. Anyone. Today, it's even easier than back in 1965 when Fred opened his sandwich shop. Today you have the Internet. The global marketplace is at your fingertips. In the past, when you had an idea of some kind or wanted to market a product or service, there were all kinds of hierarchies and people you had to impress. You might have had to get the word out into the media. If the newspaper decided not to cover you, you were out of luck. You had to go through a lot of layers to have people know about your business. But with the Internet now, the world is flat. And if you've got a great idea, within 24 hours, you can have half the world already knowing about it. Internet word of mouth travels in a heartbeat. So people right now are even better poised to make that next opportunity work. You just need one. And you can create it out of anything, like Fred did, out of a sandwich. Focusing on all your past missed opportunities will keep you from being open to the next one right in front of you. Finally, you begin to realize that there's no such thing as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Even though that's the talk you hear whenever people gather. Yeah, you know, did I ever tell you I had a chance to buy into that company? But I didn't do it. Yeah, I was offered this opportunity one time and I passed it up. Oh, man, that was my one shot. Because I blew it on that one, I guess that was it. It can never happen again. There's a great example locally here. There's a guy we've met who started a company called 1-800-GOT-JUNK. He's Brian Scudamore. He dropped out of school when he was 17 to start a company that would pick up big items that you would have to take to the dump. If you had an old couch that you couldn't throw in the trash, Brian would come get it. Or if you had useless items in your basement and you were cleaning it out and you didn't own a truck, you'd have to get rid of it somehow, so you would call Brian. Brian had a used pickup truck and just started the service of taking things to the dump for people. And his parents thought he was crazy for dropping out of school. And that didn't really seem like something that would really impress a lot of friends, like, hey, I'm a junk man. Yeah, like Sanford and Son. But he kept serving. Brian's company today is pushing $100 million. Now it's turned into something that he calls the FedEx of junk removal. And he's been profiled on Dr. Phil, and he appeared on Oprah. A guy picking up junk appearing on Oprah. Brian appeared on Oprah and took his company to $100 million because his mind knew of no such thing as lost opportunity. The concept doesn't exist for him. Number 95. Get rich quickly while getting rich slowly. Hoagy Carmichael said, quote, "Slow motion gets you there faster," end quote. A lot of people want to get rich quickly, which is fine, actually. Breakthroughs often happen quickly. But while you're making bold moves, you can also get rich slowly in a parallel universe. Have a system in place that makes an automatic monthly investment that builds wealth for you. It can be one of those automatic mutual funds that you buy as a long-term plan that promises in 35 years you'll have $1 million if you follow this plan. Those programs aren't exciting on the surface, but they give you the mental freedom to take bigger chances in your other universe, because you don't always have to sell your cow and squander all the money on the magic beans. We hear people say to us, "I spent my life savings on that project," without seeing that such a move is self-defeating. If you take your life savings and put it all into one thing and you blow it, it'll stop you from taking chances in the future ever again. And maybe it was that next chance in the future that was the right one for you, not this one. The real payoff to having a wealth accumulation plan in place is not when it matures many years away, but rather right now, in the moment. The psychological release you get from fear is powerful, and it frees your mind and spirit to really love your work and take it all the way. The peace of mind you get from the slow accumulating account is not from the money, it's from the faith. Number 96. Create a physical equivalent. The Buddha said, quote, "Inward calm cannot be maintained unless physical strength is constantly and intelligently replenished," end quote. When you've got a big financial goal that you're up to, you can reach it faster by asking the question, "How do I create a physical equivalent of this goal?" Don't leave your body behind in your pursuit of prosperity. The body can help you. Remember, the whole system is mind, body, and spirit. And whole systems succeed faster than partial, broken-off systems. A fractured system will collapse. Sometimes people get so obsessed about a mental goal that they don't even think of creating a physical equivalent for it. But wealth flows to something more than just the mind. Your body can generate enough energy to be an attractor force of its own. People with healthy bodies, for example, don't need as much sleep, and they can think more clearly. Even if you're in a wheelchair, you can create a physical equivalent by increasing your breathing exercises and doing things that make your lungs larger and bring more oxygen to the brain. Even singing will create a dynamic physical equivalent. Your mind becomes stronger when your body does. It comes along with it, and it's better able to build wealth into your life. There are benefits to being strong and healthy. People see a spring in your step, and they want to be with you. People are drawn to people who aren't just shuffling along with no connection to their bodies. So if you set a goal to double your income next year, make sure you create a physical equivalent to that. Do something that will increase your strength or your endurance or increase your energy or your physical ability to keep up with the financial goal you've hit. Set that goal too. Some people use the word body-mind to anchor this issue. The Greeks used to say that the key to success was a sound mind in a sound body, and they were correct. The two go together. Sam says, "I like the quote, 'Your health is your wealth,' because if you don't have the physical ability to function, you don't have anything. If you're too weak to make a fist, you're not going to knock 'em dead. Number 97. Create team spirit. John Wooden said, quote, "The main ingredient in stardom is the rest of the team," end quote. Your teammates don't do good work when they surrender and become unhappy. They don't think of fresh ways to help you. They don't make the customer want to come back. In fact, if you get enough unhappy players on your team, the whole mission can fall apart. So, their happiness comes first, before money, before success. Most people have this process completely reversed in life. When you ask them why they would like to succeed financially, they say because it will make everyone happy. But the opposite is true. As the happy people in Seattle's fish market proved, happiness leads to money, not the other way around. Professional golf is considered to be a serious sport, full of concentration and discipline. Yet, the great golfer Ben Hogan said his formula for success was to, quote, "be absolutely determined to enjoy what you do," end quote. Most of us are not like Ben Hogan. We wake up and surrender to the hardships of the world. We get out of bed and wave the white flag of defeat. All power is conceded to the outside. Outside circumstances, family members, spouse, co-workers, customers, people of all kinds, whatever they want, whatever makes them happy. The problem with that surrender is that we lose our self-esteem over it, and we lose that sense of inner freedom that gives us energy for life. We lose all of it. A friend sent us this passage from a book by Dr. Seuss because he said it reminded him of what we had been coaching him out of, this surrender thing we do. Quote, "You have brains in your head. You have feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself any direction you choose. You're on your own now, and you know what you know, and you are the one who'll decide where to go," end quote. In all the years we have worked with salespeople, we have found that the greatest predictor for sales success is personal happiness. Most people say that it's commitment, or drive, or purpose, or self-discipline. It's not. So have the first step you take each day be the happiness of yourself and everyone you work with. Start with your team. They are your internal customers. When they're on edge, it makes you wealth repellent. Light them up, and customers will be drawn to that light. The team, including you, comes first. The customer comes second. Number 98. Use your imagination. Claude Bristol said, quote, "Thought is the original source of all wealth, all success, material gain, all great discoveries and inventions, and of all achievement," end quote. A few months ago, Sam and his wife Val were going for a drive along a waterfront area just outside of Vancouver. One of their favorite drives has a beautiful view of the water and the spectacular mountains of British Columbia. They came across a sign advertising 3 acres of waterfront property for sale. The price tag was $1.5 million. Did they have $1.5 million burning a hole in their pocket? No. So instead of using money, Sam decided to use his imagination to see how they could buy the property. Sam called the seller at 9:30 that night and asked about the property. They met the next day over lunch, and Sam told him his story. Sam recalls, "I had to sell the seller on me, on wanting me to have the property, on working with me to buy the property." By being creative, they reached an arrangement to give Sam time to space out the purchase of the land so he could swing it. The unexpected bonus was that the seller accepted an offer to partner with Sam and invest in another real estate project he was trying to find partners for. You can always use your imagination to create real wealth, not just fantasies about the good life. When you tell successful people your story and your goals, it's surprising to see how many will want to help you. The 3-acre property will be the site of Sam's new home, but will also house a waterfront meeting center that Sam and I will use for coaching and sessions to help others create wealth in their lives. Sam has named the breathtakingly beautiful property Creator's Landing. You can create the wealth and the life you want. If you come to Creator's Landing by the Big River in Vancouver for one of our seminars, you'll see living proof that the principles we are talking about in this program work, the power of human imagination. At a class reunion, Sam talked to someone who had become a lawyer. His first thought was, this guy has it made. But soon the guy was telling Sam about how unpleasant it was to be a lawyer. The guy hated it. It's such high stress, the lawyer said, and there's an incredible amount of work to do. I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack every day. You can't believe the physical duties I have to do every single day, the types of people I have to talk to, and the amount of paperwork I have to fill out. But there were ways that lawyer could have circled in on loving his work if he'd stayed open, optimistic, and upbeat. If his language hadn't become so defeatist about it, he could have found, even within the law, something that was less stressful to him. There are many different kinds of law you can practice. You can be everything from a flamboyant, in front of the jury showboat who doesn't have to do a great deal of homework, to someone who sits at a computer and does research and filing, and the whole spectrum in between. But he had shut down his imagination. When we talk to people who want more wealth, we'll first ask them to use their imaginations. What do you like to do? We ask. And they might even say, I like hanging out, watching movies, and sitting on the couch. And unfortunately, we haven't figured out a way to get paid for doing that. Although, a friend started a blog that contained her movie and TV reviews that has started making her money, so we don't rule anything out. Do you enjoy talking to people on the phone? Do you enjoy working on the computer? Do you enjoy doing crafts and building? Writing? Do you enjoy doing things that help other people? You can start in the most general category in the world. Do you like communicating? Do you like helping? Do you like technical things? Do you like to work with your hands? Don't get overly specific at first. Some people think they have to have a specific vocation called to them, like knowing from birth they want to be a rodeo clown or a ballerina or a fireman. You don't have to pin it down. You just have to start getting closer. Circle in on your prey like a great speckled bird. Number 99. Honor yourself. Henry David Thoreau said, quote, "Wealth is the ability to fully experience life," end quote. Fear of money often causes us to treat each other like frightened, dependent children. Money can do that in our society. Case in point, the Houston Chronicle reported that bankrupt Northwest Airlines Corporation sent a memo to their workers who may no longer have jobs. In the memo, the company advised workers on ways to financially survive. One idea they recommended was to, quote, "fish in the trash for things you might like," end quote. They also suggested that you take your date for a walk in the woods instead of spending any money. The memo was called 101 Ways to Save Money. And with that mentality, it is not surprising that Northwest went bankrupt. Northwest spokesman Roman Blahosky said, some employees who received the handbook had taken issue with a couple of the items. We agree that some of these suggestions and tips were a bit insensitive, Blahosky told Reuters. If you have saved some money, pat yourself on the back. You deserve it, the memo reads. Take out only what you need and spend prudently. But you don't have to treat yourself like an undeserving child when it comes to money. You deserve plenty of money. You don't deserve a life in which all your meals come from the trash and all your dates are in the woods. Stop wondering if you deserve to be wealthy. You don't question whether you deserve other things. Why just money? If somebody hands you a cold glass of water when you're thirsty, you never think, I wonder if I deserve this water. When you need something to write with, and someone hands you a pencil, do you think, okay, thanks, but do I deserve this pencil? Why then, when somebody offers you a large amount of money to do something, do you immediately feel you might not deserve it? A lot of us carry low self-images out of childhood. Well-meaning parents have told us, you're never going to succeed because you don't even know how to clean up your room. You didn't give your schoolwork much of an effort, so you're probably not going to make much of yourself. Consequently, you come out of childhood quite often thinking, I better get some kind of job that makes a minimal amount of money, given how unsuited I am to success. And that doesn't serve you to feel unsuited to making money. It doesn't serve others either. No one wins. You know that you have something that you are really, really good at. And when you get it in alignment with a profession that serves others, you will make a lot of money at it, and you'll deserve every penny. Number 100, Move into the Light. Louis L'Amour said, quote, There will come a time when you believe that everything is finished. That will be the beginning, end quote. I was just back from Vancouver, Canada, where I spent 2 days with Sam, who lives there and gives seminars there for small business owners. And I had spoken at Sam's seminar and got to spend time with Sam plotting our next work together. Sam's father's from Jamaica, so Sam is technically a black man. He is light-skinned like Harry Belafonte or Colin Powell, and he has a Canadian accent. He loves his heritage, and was delighted to point out that he and I could be packaged as a white guy and a black guy, like Mel Gibson and Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon. Now you see on the second edition of our Small Business Millionaire book cover that we are described as the Lethal Weapon duo of business coaching. I rather liked being Mel Gibson in this combo until Mel was arrested for drunk driving, and it came out that he was wildly offensive to the arresting officer and made a number of anti-Semitic remarks about the Israelis. 2 days later, he apologized and went into treatment for alcoholism. So, maybe I am Mel after all. Places like Vancouver always feel so lovely, rain-drenched and dappled in shades of green you never see in Arizona. So my travel there is good. It refreshes. But we also don't want to miss Ralph Waldo Emerson's point about how much we shape our traveled to beauties by our inner life and perception. Rain can be overdone. It can get dreary. So many songs tell you, here's that rainy day. I forget and take for granted the magnificent light in Arizona. Ever see the Native Americans do a sand painting? Glorious. They take a fistful of rust-colored sand and let a stream come out on top of an ivory mandala of sand, and soon every shade of light in the world is being eaten and reflected by the sand. Wealth is everywhere. Emerson said, quote, To the dull mind, all of nature is leaden. To the illumined mind, the whole world sparkles with light, end quote. The illumined mind has shifted to the light. Once, many years ago, when I was depressed about not making enough money in my business, I talked to my friend and mentor, Steve Hardison. Hardison said, to shift your mind, you might want to simply shift your body into the light, literally. He recommended that I get out of Wayne's World, my nickname for the office I had in my garage, and into the outdoors in order to experience more light. More light on the outside, more light on the inside. So I reluctantly followed his advice and started doing my work on the back patio in the sun. And it shifted. My mood picked up, and I started having the conversations that generated new business. So, let's travel to India now to follow this thought through, not literally, but through the Indian poet Tagore, who said, quote, "Faith is the bird that feels the light and sings when the dawn is still dark." End quote. Faith is the bird that we wish we had in our hand. It feels the light. The bird doesn't see the light yet, but it feels it coming. You can feel success and happiness coming. Hint, it's already in you. That's why you can feel it. Even though you can't see it yet. You can't see hard evidence or money in the bank, but you can feel the light. You can just feel it coming. So you sing. You sing in the dark, or you dance when you don't feel like it. Or the doctor tells you your depression will be helped if you just get up and walk, which is dancing. It is. Watch Fred Astaire walk. Watch him just walk. Faith is the bird that sings in the dark. You are like all those amazing entrepreneurs who know they have something, but the money is gone. Yet, they labor on. They're making their product anyway. Faith is what they have. Faith is the bird that feels the light.
This has been a presentation of BBC Audiobooks America. 100 Ways to Create Wealth. Text copyright 2007 by Steve Chandler and Sam Beckford. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008 by BBC Audiobooks America. All rights reserved.